fans, and welcome into the Green 19 podcast brought to you by PackersNews.com and JS Online. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined by Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood. Guys, happy St. Patrick's Day. That is the day on which we are filming this. You might be listening to it a day or two later, but you can celebrate all week. And happy start to the new league year. The NFL league year officially began yesterday, Wednesday, March 16th at 3 p.m. Central. And Packers roster sort of emerged on the other side looking relatively the same as it did in 2021, just albeit with some different numbers for guys. The only big change, of course, was the Packers let punter Corey Bohorquez go and added punter Pat O'Donnell. Spoon, I'm just going to kind of start with you. Were you surprised that the Packers didn't make more moves leading up to yesterday? And with that also being said, were you surprised that Corey Bohorquez was one of the big moves they did make?
Well, you know, they did make a fair amount of moves to get under the salary cap. And the main thing, of course, was finalizing Aaron Rodgers' contract, which we can get into later. That was the biggest move. It got him $18 million in cap space. But it's pretty clear that they do not want to break up this team, that they're going to do everything they can to keep it together. Pretty much all the moves they've made have been aimed towards keeping the group together. And, you know, the one change we did see was that they decided they weren't going to re-sign Bohorquez, who is an unrestricted free agent, and pay a better price or a bigger price for former Chicago Bears punter Pat O'Donnell. And O'Donnell is kind of everything that Bohorquez isn't. He's really consistent. He's really good in cold weather, and he's a really good holder. So those were the things that I think made it a decision that they were comfortable with. You know, Bohorquez was really inconsistent in the final, you know, 6-8 weeks of the season. And his holding was always a problem. We saw that. Now, he's not entirely responsible for all the problems they had, but, you know, you could see he had issues getting the ball, the laces right. And, you know, in Chicago, Cairo Santos has missed like 6 field goals in 2 years, and he's part of that. He's been a holder for 8 years or however long he's been there. So it was a pretty significant move. They paid him $4 million over 2 years. And so they went after him hard. They knew from the beginning they weren't going to re-sign Bohorquez and went after O'Donnell. So that's who they got. They got a more reliable guy.
I know that we talked yesterday, and Ryan, you talked about part of Bohorquez's dismissal was salary cap issues. But how much do you also think this might be Rick Bisaccia making his first real sort of statement as a special teams coach to say, no, I'd rather work with this guy than this guy?
Well, yeah, general manager Brian Gutekunst said when we talked to him before the combine that Rich Bisaccia is not just here to stick to the X's and O's and have no opinion on personnel. I mean, he's going to have a big voice on special teams. So I think anything that you see from a special teams personnel standpoint is going to have Rich Bisaccia's name written all over it, and for good reason. I mean, look, for all the good things that Brian Gutekunst did last year in personnel, I mean, he fashioned maybe the most talented roster in the NFL. He never got special teams right, and he tried. I mean, he switched punters. He switched long snappers. He drafted Amari Rodgers in the 3rd round to be a punt returner, and he really struck out 0-for-3 in all 3 of the primary positions on special teams. So, you know, the Corey Bohorquez is such an interesting, fascinating case because through 12 games, he was having undisputably the best punting season in the history of the Green Bay Packers. He was fourth in net punting at 43.4 yards per punt. That type of thing doesn't happen for Packers punters, not inside Lambeau Field. And then he, you know, Spoon says that he was inconsistent down the stretch. I mean, he was bad. He was consistently bad down the stretch, and it culminated with the block punt. But even before that, about kicking coverage, and there's no question Corey Bjorkvist has one of the most talented legs in the league. He's proven that. The year before in Buffalo, he led the league in gross punting. That doesn't happen in Buffalo. What was really hard to understand about why he fell apart down the stretch is that he punted extremely well in the cold in Buffalo in 2020, and he just did not carry that into Lambeau Field. So he'll find a new home. And Corey Bjorkvist is very, very talented. There's no question about that. He's going to have a long career in this league punting. But yeah, the Packers made the change, and I think absolutely that Rich Bisaccia's name is written all over that.
Not only did they make the change on special teams there at punter, a lot of, I guess, tinkering on the defensive side of the ball. Za'Darius Smith was let go, Oren Burks was let go, but Devondre Campbell was restructured. Preston Smith was restructured. Preston Smith was restructured. Devondre Campbell was re-signed.
Preston Smith was extended. Extended. He was extended, not restructured.
This is all a test to see and how much you know, and you are passing Spoon. We kind of knew it would be one or the other when it came to the Smith guys, Preston Smith or Za'Darius Smith. And it seemed more and more as time went on, like it was leaning towards Preston Smith. That being said, Spoon, in your opinion, was it the right choice?
Yeah, I think so. I think you bet on the healthy guy. And Preston Smith has missed one game in 4 years. And is when you know, in shape and has, you know, a defensive coordinator who lets him pass rush, he's a pretty good player. He's not as dynamic as Za'Darius Smith. When Za'Darius Smith is healthy, he's not the pass rusher that Za'Darius Smith is, but he's a good all-around player. And Za'Darius Smith is coming off a back surgery, and the Packers don't know whether he can last the whole year. They do know Preston Smith likely will. And he still had a pretty decent year last year with 9 sacks. So it wasn't like they paid him a huge amount, but you know, $13 million a year is pretty good. And it was more than Za'Darius Smith got from Baltimore. And that's once again because of Za'Darius Smith's back, which is a concern. Now, the other thing is that Preston Smith became more of a leader and more of a, I think he broke out of the shadow of Za'Darius Smith, because Za'Darius Smith wasn't there all year. You know, he's kind of a mercurial guy, Za'Darius Smith. And I think it kind of affected how Preston Smith, what kind of impact he could have in the locker room and on defense. And you saw kind of last year, he became a little bit more of a spokesman and a little bit more of the veteran guy, and had a pretty good year. So that's pretty much why they went with him.
And then Ryan, the other guy in that scenario, Devondre Campbell, how important was he to find a way to keep on this roster?
Well, it's been decades, literally, since the Packers have had an inside linebacker like Devondre Campbell. I mean, he's the first team All-Pro at that position since this guy named Ray Nitschke, that, you know, Packers fans should know pretty well. His name's on the training camp facility. So once you, you know, have a guy like that fall into your lap, and that's really what happened. I mean, they had no idea what they were getting with Devondre Campbell when they signed him last June. They signed him for 1 year, $2 million. Maybe the funniest part of that is that they were in on Devondre Campbell the previous offseason, and they lost the bidding war to the Arizona Cardinals for 1 year and $6 million. So they weren't even willing to go to $6 million. They had no idea what they were getting with Devondre Campbell, and it was clear from the very beginning that he was a different linebacker in this Joe Barry scheme Not just a guy that could do a bit of everything. You know, he's got that 4.58 40 that he ran coming out of college, which, you know, it lends with that plus his long frame lends to a coverage ability that the Packers have sorely lacked for a long time on the second level. But, you know, he was a sure tackler. He only missed 5 and 158 chances last year. But the biggest thing is that he was a playmaker. And if just in the recent past, you know, Blake Martinez had a ton of tackles in Mike Pettine's scheme. That's what he was asked to do. And he filled that role well. He got a nice contract with the New York Giants because of that, but he never tilted the field. And Devondre Campbell actually was able to tilt the field. And so when you've got a guy like that and at a position that you've been long desperate to fill and long unable to fill to that level, you can't let that guy go. So in terms of retaining the roster that was in place last year, after Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams, the obvious pieces, Devondre Campbell was absolutely the top priority, and they went 5 years, $50 million to secure him.
A little bit of fun breaking news, not necessarily Packers related, but it is in the NFL. The Buffalo Bills are releasing Cole Beasley today. So that just broke. On the Packers offensive side of the ball, guys, the Green Bay elected to move on from both Lucas Patrick and Billy Turner. Do you feel like they are comfortable with where this offensive line is at, or was that more of a money issue and they'll figure it out, or are they comfortable with what they have while they wait for Elton Jenkins to come back from recovery and to see what David Bakhtiari is going to be able to do? Spoon, go.
I think they made a decision on Billy Turner based on health. I think the knee injury that he suffered was probably a little worse than, you know, has been reported. And he played hurt in that playoff game. And, you know, in retrospect, they probably shouldn't have played him. I mean, he didn't play that bad. But it's sort of a lousy thing for him that here he went and gutted out a game, you know, and played left tackle at that for it, and he gets cut. So he'll get a chance to sign somewhere else, but, you know, they get some salary cap relief from him, and they pretty much will either start Josh Nyman there probably, or they'll draft a guy. I think they probably will draft a lineman fairly high, a tackle. And then they always have the option of moving Elton Jenkins over there too when he comes back. So they have a lot of options. I mean, they've got some pretty decent interior guys that they like, John Runyon, Josh Myers, Royce Newman. They lose Patrick, who is really a reliable guy, a guy they really like. But, you know, you have to lose someone when you're $51 million or $49 million over the cap. So that was one of the choices they made, that they weren't going to re-sign him.
Now, of course, the two big ones on the offensive side of the ball, the ones that everyone really wants to hear about, Devontae Adams and Aaron Rodgers. Let's actually start with Rodgers, because that is taken care of. We know where that stands now. The deal is, shocker of all shockers, what was originally reported for the most part, $200 million over 4 years, 3 years guaranteed. First question, and I'll just go to both of you quick. Do you think he plays out that full contract, Ryan?
No, I don't. I do think you're seeing him multiple years, and at this point, I do think that he retires a Packer, but the full contract, no, I have a hard time seeing that.
Spoon, do you agree?
Well, it's set up really to be a 2 or 3 year deal. The 2 years after that are really just phony years to help them spread out the salary cap charge. So I would say it's sort of set up for him to play 2 years, and if he's playing real well, that it would be a third year. I mean, there is some possibility that they could get rid of him after one. But they would have to trade him, and someone would have to be willing to take on a $58 million. It's even more than that, $65 million cap hit if they traded him. So, you know, there's options, but I think it winds up being a 2-year deal.
Okay. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I want you to explain that a little bit if you can, because my original understanding of it was that it was essentially a 2-year contract that was spread out over 4 years for the money. But then there was
five years.
There was a lot of times that it was explained as like 3 years guaranteed. So can you just kind of explain, like, we're 5 years old, for those of us, like, what that means, like, why some people believe he's only going to play for two, why it seems like it's going to be three, but it's set up for five. Just,
well, he gets $101 million guaranteed against everything, against injury, salary cap, you know, performance, whatever. Bottom line, he gets $101 million. So that is really 2 years of play, you know. So are the Packers going to cut him after 1 year and wind up still having to pay him that, you know, $101 million guaranteed? No, they're not going to do that. So, you know, at the minimum, it's a 2-year at $50 million per year. Now, the third year, there's also a guarantee, but they don't have to make that decision right away to fully guarantee it. They could wait all the way up into training camp and beyond to say, all right, no, we're not going to guarantee it. We're getting rid of you. So I think effectively most people feel it's a 2-year deal because of the guaranteed money. So he basically comes out with $50 million per year on this deal and $101 million guaranteed. Those are both the most in the league. The $50 million per year tops Patrick Mahomes's 45. The $101 million up front surpasses Dak Prescott. So Rodgers got everything he wanted. There's no question this was about money. You know, you don't go and become the highest paid by a lot if you're not interested in money. And so he got the money and the prestige. And, you know, the downside of it is that chances are they're going to be devastated when he leaves.
One quick point about that, Spoon. If you go back to that press conference in training camp, this whole time my mind just goes there because it was such just theatrical, right? Mm-hmm. But he put it all out there. People forget this. He said then that it was about the money. He said that. What he said was that after the 2020 season, he felt like he had a great year, and he likened it to any employee in any profession feeling like you have a great year. And he felt like there'd be something done with his contract then, and that there was a hesitancy that he felt from the Packers management to do anything about his contract after that great year. And he felt unappreciated because of that. And he said, just like you and your job, if you feel like you have a great year, you're expecting a little bit of you're expecting to be rewarded for that, right? And he felt like he wasn't. But he said all the way back at the start of training camp that it was about the money. So this whole narrative that it's not been about the money for Aaron Rodgers, he said in the exact same press conference that it's not about the money for him. But he also said the opposite, and he's been double talking for about a year now. So this whole narrative that's not about the money, Spoon, he literally said it was. Those were his words. He said that. So he put it all out there.
Yeah, and the thing about it, he did, by not taking a huge signing bonus, you know, it's not like he did the Packers a little bit of a favor by taking it in guaranteed money, which means he doesn't get it all right away. He does get it, but he doesn't get it right away. That was the favor he did so they could reduce his salary cap number. But from a total money, total salary cap situation, he gave them zero break, which is his, you know, that's, if the Packers are willing to pay it and he can get it, he should. He should do whatever he can. But don't come across as though you're doing, you know, have your mouthpiece Pat McAfee come out and say that, you know, you're doing all this cap friendly deal. It's not cap friendly. When he leaves, you know, there's, if he leaves after 3 years, he counts $76 million against the cap. So he's basically going to take up maybe one fourth of their cap. And he's leaving them in a terrible situation. It's $68 million if he leaves after 2 years. So, you know, he double speaks, and that is certainly the case. He really should be saying almost nothing about it because it's all about the money.
Let me ask you about this. Would it be worth it? Like you said, that, you know, in 3 years, they're going to be in a horrible situation. If you come out of it with a ring, is it worth it?
Yes.
That's what Absolutely. They think. That's what they think. Yeah.
That's the whole point. That's the whole point. I mean, what do you hear Packers fans complain about the most? 3 decades of Hall of Fame quarterback play and only 2 rings.
Right.
Which is a legitimate complaint. I mean, at least, if you have that kind of sustained quarterback play, sure, you want more than 2 rings out of that. Now, no one's the New England Patriots. They kind of broke the mold. But, yeah, I mean, I get – so, yeah, if you get a – they're squeezing this title window for every drop they can get out of it, and they get a ring out of it. It's hard to fault a Super Bowl trophy.
Another guy that could be a huge, huge part of that is, of course, Devontae Adams. He reportedly told the Packers this week that he would not play on the franchise tag. That hasn't, of course, been confirmed necessarily by Adams' camp, but it wouldn't be shocking if that was the truth, because that's essentially what he said to us during the season, that he didn't want the tag, he didn't want to play on the tag, and essentially that he wouldn't. It's not shocking. A lot of players don't like to play on the tag. They have until July, is that correct, Spoon, to work a long-term deal? Mm-hmm. So it's not like, you know, he's going to be leaving in the next week, but like when – so basically, let's just start with this. When Packers fans hear that Devontae Adams told Green Bay, I won't play on the tag, do they really need to freak out in March?
No, no. I mean, what player in his, right mind would say, oh, yeah, I'll play for the franchise tag. Yeah, sure. I mean, at least a player of his caliber, there's no way. I mean, so to me, that was a nothing burger. To say that he told them he won't play for the franchise. As you said, he's pretty much been saying that. And that's also a negotiating tactic. You know, okay, I'm not going to play for the franchise. You better sign me. And they do need to sign him because his cap number is $20 million right now. But I think this thing could go on for a while. I think Adams is dug in because he did all the work and took all the risk last year, and now he wants to be the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL, and probably rightly so. So I think this will take a while to resolve.
Let me ask you this, and I want to hear both of your opinion. If he was playing on the tag this year, he'd receive, I think, around 20.5, somewhere around about that number. Which is a lot, but it's only a one-year deal for a guy that's going to be turning 30 this season. He wants a long-term deal. That's understandable. What do you think the standoff is? What's the holdup that they can't agree on, that the two parties can't agree on?
Guaranteed money, how much they would give him up front. And, you know, he probably wants a lot of guaranteed money. As I said, he took all the risk last year. He wants to take the risk out of the next couple of years. So if for some reason the Packers cut him after 2 years, he would still have made a significant amount of money. So I think that's what it comes down to, basically.
Ryan, let me ask you this, and then we'll move on to our last topic here. The Packers were able to keep Aaron Rodgers. They did end up bringing back Alan Lazard, who had been a – or they placed the tender on Alan Lazard, the second-round tender. If, hypothetically, they were to lose Devontae Adams, are they still okay?
No, they got to have Devontae Adams. Because look at that receiver position behind him. I mean, if you lose Devontae Adams, we don't know what's going to happen in the draft, obviously. But you lose Devontae Adams, your best receiver, your top receiver is Alan Lazard, who is known more for his blocking. Your number two receiver is Randall Cobb. The only receiver they have for multiple years under contract at this point is Amari Rodgers. They've got to make this work with Devontae. If you're going all in and mortgaging completely the future to do so, then there is no other option than to make it work and to come to an agreement long-term with Devontae Adams, or at least get him on the field in 2022. So that's a guy they've got to have.
Spoon, speaking of Randall Cobb, I was going to let you kind of explain what they did. They essentially gave him a pay cut, right? And asked him to take a pay cut in order to stay.
Yes. He took a $5.8 million pay cut to stick around. And let's face it, if Aaron Rodgers wasn't the quarterback, he wouldn't be here. You know, they wouldn't be still paying him $2 million or whatever it is. It's just not what, you know, he's basically riding Rodgers' coattails. And, you know, it's sort of ironic because, you know, here's Rodgers wanting Cobb to stick around, you know, so he's benefiting that way, but he takes so much money that they have to cut his salary down to almost, you know, minimum. So, you know, that's an interesting dynamic between those two. You know, yeah. I guess Cobb's okay with Rodgers making $150 million and he making $2 million. So
maybe Rodgers picks up the tab on their Friday night dinners.
I guess so.
Yeah. Another guy that his news broke today was Adrian Amos. I'm going to let you explain that real quick, Spoon, because you were all over it right before we hopped on this podcast.
Well, yeah, I didn't break it, but, you know, basically what...
I'm going to give you credit.
What they did was what they do with pretty much all the contracts. They take a large chunk of a guy's base salary and they convert it to a signing bonus, add dummy years on the end, and that lowers the cap number. So they were able to lower Amos's cap number by $4.7 million. If you add the $5.8 million they cut on Cobb, that's $10.5 million. They were able to cut, and that got them under the cap. Now they've still got to get some more because they haven't turned in the contract for Devondre Campbell. That's agreed upon, is ready to be signed, I'm sure, or is signed, but until they turn it into the league, his $4.12 million cap number this year doesn't count. So at some point they'll make some more room and then they'll turn in that contract. But I don't know how long Campbell's going to want to wait because it's got a signing bonus on it and he's going to want that money. So, you know, that's got to be something that will happen pretty soon, I would think.
And then Ryan, just kind of as we wrap up here, looking at that Packers secondary, I mean, how important and vital is it to try to keep Rasul Douglas on this roster as well, who as of now at the time of recording, no deal has been reached to bring him back to the Packers or with another team. He's still sort of floating out there in the ether.
Yeah, that's another strange one to me, because if you just look at it from a talent standpoint, it's obvious, right? I mean, how often do you get a corner that is the type of playmaker that Rasul Douglas was last season? Two interceptions of his five were game sealers, including that one in Arizona. Two more were pick sixes. You want a playmaker like that in the secondary. But this isn't fantasy football, it has to actually work on the field within the confines of 11 players and not just on paper. On paper, it's obvious. But I don't know how that configuration works with three corners on the field, because you have Rasul Douglas back. Your top three are all perimeter guys. And, you know, a year ago, I would have said absolutely, you know, when they hired Joe Barry, I was fully on the Jair Alexander was bred for this star position as a slot corner in his defense, with his speed, his toughness, his playmaking, all these things. And then he took the wrong end of a hit against Najee Harris. And overnight, you realize, well, Jair Alexander's number one thing, I mean, it, by far, is his ability to take half the field away as a perimeter corner. And that, I mean, that you cannot go another season without that. So if you take Rasul Douglas back, if you re-sign him, you're essentially signing up to put Jair Alexander in the slot, because Rasul Douglas plays perimeter. Eric Stokes plays perimeter. Neither one of those guys are moving inside. Jair Alexander might have the profile for it, but coming off that shoulder injury, I don't see how it's feasible to expose him to that type of contact that you get when you're playing close to the line of scrimmage. And at the end of the day, they need Jair Alexander to be what he is, which is a shutdown corner. So I just, you know, I'd be very interested. I mean, how that all works, I find it hard to see. But from a talent standpoint, it's an obvious no-brain choice. So we'll see how it plays out. But I go back and forth on it.
Okay, guys, to end here, instead of doing your final 60 seconds, I'm going to give you a scenario and let you talk us through it. If you were the Packers general manager, with where it currently stands, so you're not redoing anything they've already done, with where everything currently stands, what's the most important move for you to make? What's at the top of your priority list? Ryan, go.
Boy, you know, I think that in a lot of ways, it turns to the draft. Look, I get that general manager Brian Gutekunst's statement announcing that Aaron Rodgers resigning said maintain and enhance the roster, but the most significant enhancements at this point are going to be through the draft. So I look at edge rusher, receiver, corner, if they don't bring back Rasul Douglas. Those three positions are vital to draft well this spring. And you know, the other thing, and this is outside their control in a lot of ways, but if they can get healthy, if they can have better luck with their health this season with some guys coming off significant injuries, I'm talking Elgton Jenkins, Robert Tonyan, potentially. If they can get those guys back and healthy and playing like themselves, this is a really, really talented team. So draft and then heal up are to me the two big things.
Spoon, what's your first move as GM?
Multi, but it's in the same vein as get deals done with Adams and Jair Alexander. Create some, you know, salary cap room that will allow you to maybe pick up a Devondre Campbell type free agent before training camp or after the draft. You know, when you start to see where you need some help, you just can't replace good cap room. It leaves you flexible and allows you to make moves that you might not be able to move. So I would say in the next 2 months, they need to get deals done with both those guys.
Well, they've only got a couple of months left to do it. But guys, in the meantime, we've got a little bit of March Madness. Spoon, I know you're a huge Wisconsin fan. Did you have Wisconsin going all the way in your bracket?
Well, no, you know, I'm not a huge Wisconsin fan. I had season tickets to UWM. You might have gotten confused there. But I do Wisconsin, and I'm going to see them on Sunday. So we shall see.
Assuming they win tomorrow night.
Yeah, assuming they win tomorrow night. That's right.
Well, they're going to beat Colgate. Where do you got them going in the bracket, Spoon?
I don't. I didn't fill out a bracket. I haven't had time. I mean, kind of been on all this free agency stuff. So I haven't had time to even consider it.
Are you one of those that puts a lot of time in your bracket?
Me?
Yeah.
No, because I'm usually pretty busy around now. So I didn't even do one.
Yeah, I filled out two yesterday in less than 5 minutes. So I was like, I just kind of went, oh, yeah, sure. There. In one of them, though, I did have Wisconsin going to the Final Four. So
wow, that's pretty. Yeah, well, I am interested. I mostly want to see how the Big Ten does because I watch a lot of Big Ten basketball. That's probably the most most I follow. So I like a lot of those Big Ten teams. I think they're really rugged. So I want to see how they do, whether their brand of ball stands up against other conferences.
Not sure they can do worse than last year.
No, that's for sure.
Well, we shall see. It tips off tomorrow night. The ball is tipped. It's running for your life. You're super. I'm just going to stop now. We will be there to cover it for you all. Well, for March Madness, but also for the Packers as they head into pro days and the NFL draft, which is now just a little over a month away. And as some more of these deals get wrapped up, as they continue to shape this 2020 roster. Stay tuned to PackersNews.com for full coverage of those moves. This has been the Green 19 Podcast, brought to you by JS Online and PackersNews.com.